Economic Development Committee to order. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3605. And if there's anyone that would like from the insurance industry to come up and give us a brief overview of some of the things that that occurred in terms of claims handling and that sort of thing, we'd love to hear that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Powell. I represent State Farm Insurance Companies, and in the property casualty side, I represent Liberty Northwest as well. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, very briefly, as you know, in a catastrophic situation, the insurers have teams of people that they place on the scene and establish work sites to handle claims. And they've gotten fairly good at it over time. And one the size of this one, I think they've done a very, very good job of responding. Because of concerns over, we heard that there were concerns over some claims, and so I checked with my clients. And, for example, State Farm had one pending complaint, and the complaint was not about coverage, but it was a dispute over the charges that the contractor had bid on the job, and they wanted a second opinion on how much that would be. Obviously, in a situation like that, it's difficult to get enough contractors all at once, particularly in a rural area.
Right.
And so that was the only one from their standpoint that I'm aware of that was a problem. Apparently, there are a few problems with flood coverages and when the flood coverage kicks in and whether or not people had flood coverage. I might tell you, in 1996, we flooded here in my office on State Street, flooded, and I did not have flood insurance. And $25,000 later, I was wishing I did, and now I do.
I also had an office on State Street in the 96 flood. Only the water came right up to the threshold of the door, literally 1 inch. So lucked out on that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lana Butterfield, and I'm here today representing Safeco Insurance Company. And I want to tell you about something that our customer care, which is a special what they call CAT team, did in Oregon that is becoming protocol for other catastrophes. In the Astoria area, there was some power outages and so forth, and so they started making outgoing calls to customers who hadn't reported a claim. They made approximately 400 of these proactive calls to people, just making sure that they're okay, giving claims number, because in some instances that was lost, you know, due to records being lost. And making the outreach to say, if you want to start a claim, let's just start it right now. The response from customers was overwhelming. One lady said, spoke with Mrs. Williams, who said it was a blessing we could reach her. It was the only second call she has received since Sunday. Left 800 numbers should they need to file a claim, advised her of her policy number with us. And so, I mean, customers and agents were just thought that was really wonderful, and so we're going to make that a protocol for our responses in the future.
Tremendous. Thank you very, very much. Any questions or comments from the committee for our panel? Yes, Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say congratulations on those good records and that good work, and thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
John, before you leave, just I'm just curious, and not trying to put you on the spot, but you had one problem out of a universe of how many? Do we have any?
Chairman, members of the committee, I did see the data, but I would, which is confidential, and
okay.
I was asked not even to print it off, and I didn't even print it off my computer, but I want to say a couple thousand,
yes, okay,
claims in that area, and that's not confidential.
Uh-huh.
It's just that it's in that range,
yeah.
I think, of magnitude for, uh-huh, that was just State Farm.
Yes.
And there was one that they had problems. I think they had two customers that they were trying to contact that they could not find, that perhaps had to relocate or something, but they were trying to track them down.
Very good job. Thank you both very much. Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you very much for that nice testimony.
Thank you.
And John and Lena, I guess.
Yes.
What? Okay, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Lana.
If current the insurance program is working well, there's no complaints during the December 7 floods or disasters. And my fundamental question, why do we need this bill? It seems to me they are working well. Why do we need to give the governor the special power to declare the declaring emergencies okay, but giving the power 30 days or 60 days to work it out while current system is working so well? Can you give us some justification for that?
Thank you, Representative Lim. One of the reasons is we've had some instances where there have been some problems, and I think what you've heard here today are some of the outstanding examples and the way that I think all of us would hope that the system works. And I think this serves as a model, and we were hoping and encouraging others to follow this good lead.
Okay, and since, Mr. Chair, you mentioned some of the problems, can I hear some of the problems, what happened?
Well, John?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, might say that this morning you will hear amendments described by the department that a work group has worked on since the first hearing here. And the thrust of these amendments really are to develop a protocol through rulemaking at the insurance division over how to handle this situation where people are dislocated, unable to communicate, and thus have a set of rules in place that insurers and the regulator are comfortable with going into future disasters. And that will allow the industry then to prepare in advance for how to handle suspension of notices of termination and cancellation and that sort of thing. So that in essence, when this happens, they can go right to a systematic methodology of doing that. This is likened to turning a large boat around at sea. It takes several miles and it's kind of a slow process, because most of the notifications for non-payment of premium, termination, cancellation are automated in a computer. And you can't just turn that off and do everything manually suddenly. And so this will allow the industry and the regulator to work together on methodologies of how to more quickly do that in cases of emergency.
Okay, thank you. I have one more.
Please.
I'm not sure who is going to answer my questions. My question I'm going to ask is a fundamental mm-hmm. questions, such as I look through the major summaries and the bills and plus others. Last year, 2007, in December, we had a disaster. The governor declared that the emergency situation, and at the same time declared 30 days, make sure that the insurance still covered, and then a continuation of the insurance. I'd like to know what governor has had that authority to, he can declare the emergency, but what power he has meddling into private industry. You need to sustain 30 days or 60 days or 1 year. Where is the statute he can do that? I don't know who is going to answer that questions. Am I clear on that issue?
you're clear, Vice Chair Lim, and perhaps someone from the executive department can assist us in answering your question here in a few moments. Any further questions or comments for Mr. Powell? John, thank you very, very much. Appreciate that. Lana, thank you, too.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
John kind of touched on it, and I was just going to comment. I had remembered from testimony, and maybe this would help Representative Lim, part of the problem was, I believe, when because of a disaster and your finances and your checkbook might be in the floodwater or whatever, and a payment is due or a premium is due, this gives the breathing time so they're not canceled due to lack of payment because of the disaster. So I think that was part of it also.
Thank you, Representative Huffman.
Thank you very much for clarification. My question is not the giving the time of 30 days, 60 days. That's not the issue. I want to find out for sure what basis in the statutes governor is depending on. He can issue the decree that the 30 days, 60 days extension in the private industry.
Thank you, Vice Chair Lamont. I understand. Thank you. And Representative Huffman, thank you too for your input. Yes, the bills are not at all intended to be punitive in any way, but rather helpful to everyone concerned, both the potential claimants as well as the insurers. With that, I'd like to call the department forward, and I'm presuming Mr. Kipper and Mr. Savage to present. Mr. Kipper to present the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3605.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Kipper. I'm the administrator for the Insurance Division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and you have before you copies of proposed amendments to House Bill 3605. These amendments were developed between members of the division and members of the insurance industry. Very briefly, most of the language that you will need to consider is found in Section 2. The amendments address the fact that when the governor declares a state of emergency, the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services may issue emergency rules. Those rules would relate to the reporting requirements for claims, grace period for payment of claims or payment of premiums, and temporary postponement of cancellations and non-renewals. This does provide a time frame in which those rules would be in place, and also addresses the geographic areas in which those rules would apply. It does direct the director to adopt rules that establish general criteria for orders issued under this section, which is what Mr. Powell was referring to. In other words, create a protocol or a framework for the operations under these emergency rules. And finally, the rulemaking authority, as set forth in this bill, would not limit or affect the rulemaking authority otherwise granted to the director by law. And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, those encapsulate the amendments that you have before you.
Thank you very much. Committee members, questions, comments for Mr. Kipper?
No, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair Lim, please.
Yes, I want to make sure at this time, even though I heard from you at this time, I want to make sure this is an amendment. It is the compromised amendment with the industry. I want to make sure not only the Liberty Northwest and the safe call, but I want to make sure all the insurance industry also has been working on this amendment, not just one or two industries.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I represent the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America, or PCI, and we have been working with the division on the Dash 2 amendments and are satisfied that this amendment is acceptable to the industry. I think, Mr. Chairman, to answer just a quick question on the authority of the governor.
Okay.
When the disaster came in December, the governor does have emergency powers under this ORS 401.
I understand that.
055. When it gets into specifics and how to deal with insurance contracts, the order came out. The industry didn't challenge that order because I think some of the elements in that order were the right thing to do. Our industry felt that it was the right thing to do to deal with the elements within the Dash 2 amendments. Having this, the Dash 2 specific in statute, as Mr. Powell and the administrator spoke of, to be able to pull this off the shelf in future disasters is something that will be helpful for the industry. However, this is taken from models such as Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana that have dealt with these disasters. And so, you know, we're okay with the Dash 2 amendments as drafted and believe it's, I think, a positive step before the next disaster.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Please, Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you very much. And sorry I'm asking too many questions this morning, but I just want to clarify. The issue I'm presenting is not the matter or you are challenging it or not. I'm asking the fundamental question, where the power come from the governor on the when the disaster happened December 7, that he can declare emergency. He has the power there. But where is the power come from that he can say you need to extend 30 days or 60 days or 90 days or 1 year that you need to work this matter? I just want to challenge the specific power that the governor said that. I'd like to someone explain to me from the statute where he got the power. Not only satisfy for myself, someone might challenge this later. Governor used unauthorized power. That's the question I have.
And Vice Chair Lim, I'd like to have the governor's office answer your question. And as soon as Mr. Evans is available, General Caldwell. I'm seeing that General Caldwell's offering to answer this question. Thank you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Military Department. Mr. Evans from the Governor's Office went out to grab a copy of the statute of 401, which is behind you. I don't know why we didn't think to grab that. But the essence of the 401 is that it's a very broad statute. And what I think has been discussed here is that because it is broad and the language does imply but doesn't specify the governor's powers, then one can interpret that as being a very wide lane. And what this bill does is try to narrow that, and so everybody knows that the governor actually in 401 is now being narrowed down. That lane's being narrowed down, so the insurance industry does have absolute guidelines that they can use that the governor, the state, and the insurance industry all know what the rules are, as opposed to being implied or guessed. And so that's really what came out of this. That's what started this whole issue. So in essence, it's not expanding the governor's powers, and one could argue that it's really narrowing them. Because right now the language is open enough that the governor, I think, legally, through legislature, opened that door with the formation of 401, and I think now you'll probably get a bunch of lawyers in a room. We could get all kinds of answers, but generally speaking, it's pretty broad, and this really puts borders on it. And I think that's really the essence.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Lim, whether it's very broad and we're narrowing it, I think what we've decided to do is instead of having a gray area that could be litigated in the future, depending on how far they would want to go, it's better to look at the things that are the right thing to do and put those and clear them up in statute, and then further take that and work in the rulemaking process for the future. And so that's what we've decided to do, and I think is a positive step.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please, Vice Chair Lim.
I don't have a question concerning this amendment. We are going to put it in, make sure governor has that power. This is clear. But I'm talking about the December 7 disaster, that even though the broad interpretation, what is the broad interpretation at the time the governor has the power to do that? That's the question. I don't think that has been cleared yet.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Lim, according to the order that the governor put out, it was under 401.035. And perhaps maybe we can pull it off the shelf back there and just kind of read that and see what it says, because it, I think it generally speaks to the governor's power.
We have it right here.
Yes. might look under 065 sub 2. That's for DQ.
Right, this is the one I was looking at, is 065 sub 2.
Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 401.065 sub 2 and sub 3 give the governor the authority to suspend provisions of any order or rule of a state agency or direct agencies to utilize your employees, state personnel, facilities, performance to alleviate actual damage, and may direct agencies to provide supplemental services. Sub 2, I believe, gives him the authority to suspend rules, it clearly does, and declare strict compliance with provisions of order of rule. It is a very broad statement, and it could be read in many ways, and only being challenged is the only way to determine if he's correct in his interpretation. If they don't challenge it, then it doesn't go to an arbitrator, a court. The only way to determine if he interpreted this rule correctly is if it's challenged, and it was not challenged.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Do you agree with that, Sean?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I think you're absolutely correct that broad authority, although it seems very broad to be able to suspend any law or rule, there's also other areas of law, of contract law. And so, for instance, I think Representative Lim is looking at how businesses and their customers may have contracts with each other. I think you're right. A court would have to determine the broad authority of the governor versus certain contract law. I think what we've decided to do is we didn't challenge the order because we thought those elements were the right thing to do. It's better to work those elements up front, which we are in the Dash 2 amendments, and then so we don't have to get into that issue in the future.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
Some clarification. When the 401 here, police powers during the state of emergency, suspension of agency rules. When agency rules is talking about the statutes or the rules agency made, could someone clarify that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, most of the insurance statutes are in rule as well. And so if you look through the, there is statutes, but most of it is in the insurance code as well. So I think suspending some of those elements with renewals, non-renewal, cancellation, those are elements of the rule, if I'm correct.
Okay. Just my comment, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Lim.
I think a 401 statute here, there has if someone could challenge it, but my point is not challenging, it's not unchallenging, and we want to make sure in the future that no one challenging the later. I just want to make sure that we understand that, but certainly this is some gray area there with the Dash Amendment. Proposed amendment on this, it's like 35, what was that? Yes, 3605, I think this is a good one, and this will clarify in the future any confusions. So I just want to bring the point, what has been in there was the statute, and this new proposal, this will make sure in the future no one contemplating. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Lim. Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out to Vice Chair Lim that if we had a lieutenant governor and the governor was not in the state, they would have the same authority.
Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Lim.
When we talk about the lieutenant governor, we need to create one first.
A very good point, Vice Chair Lim. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the dash two amendments into House Bill 3605.
Representative Holby moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 3605. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, hearing none. Representative Holby?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 3605 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Excuse me, we're a little premature yet. I want to, is there any objections to the adoption of the dash two amendments to House Bill 3605? Not seeing any. They are adopted. Now, Representative Holby, please.
I repeat myself. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 3605 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Holby moves House Bill 3605 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Excused.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Lim.
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley.
Aye.
Chair Whip.
Votes aye. House Bill 3605, as amended, having received the necessary majority, is moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much, committee members. And I would like to assign Representative Boone to carry that bill to the floor. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3605 and open a work session on House Bill 3606. And we have dash one amendments for this bill. And Mr. Barley, are you going to present those amendments? Is there anyone else that you'd like to bring up with you?
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to do that. Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Byerly, Assistant Director for Unemployment Insurance for the Employment Department. The Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3606 basically will allow the operation of House Bill 3606 only upon which time there is no federal penalty. As I've described before, there's a penalty when we go into extended benefits. If currently we waive the waiting week, under federal law, we will not be reimbursed for the first week of the federal share. This language in the new Section 4 would basically put that language in law and have it waiting there pending federal legislation to change the penalty. And once that's passed, then this law will become operational.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Mr. Byerly?
Mr. Chair?
Vice Chair Lim.
The money is asking for $121,500. That will be enough to cover.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Lim, that section with these amendments comes out of the bill.
No, it comes out of the bill.
Yeah, there will
okay.
be,
yes,
in essence, Vice Chair Lim, no fiscal impact on this, and we're going to hear from Mr. Brennan here very
okay.
shortly about what that means.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional questions or comments? Tom, thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
That. And with those amendments, Mr. Brennan, if you would please share with the committee what impact that will have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 3606 came to our committee with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. The primary rationale for that referral, I believe, was the original bill had the $121,500 allocation to the Employment Department for the retroactive payments. The Dash 1 amendments, as Mr. Byerly indicated, remove those that allocation, and also by thereby doing also eliminate the potential $10 million fiscal impact of this bill that would be that would accrue by a penalty. So in your packets you have the fiscal analysis of the Dash 1 amendment. It is essentially undefined, but however, speaking with John Borden, who was the fiscal analyst who prepared the Dash 1 amendment fiscal impact, he has indicated that this measure does not warrant the referral to the Committee on Ways and Means, and the Speaker's office has been asked and given approval to rescind the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means, so this bill would be able to go directly to the floor should the committee adopt the Dash 1 amendments.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Appreciate that. Are there any questions from the committee members on the impact there? I'm not seeing any. Vice Chair Riley, please.
Mr. Chair, I move that we amend 3606 with the Dash 1 amendments.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Riley. Vice Chair Riley moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3606. Is there any discussion on that amendment? I'm not seeing anyone. Is anyone opposed to the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3606? Seeing none, they stand adopted. Thank you very much. Vice Chair Riley?
Mr. Chair, I move that we rescind the referral to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Riley moves to rescind the referral of House Bill 3606 as amended to Ways and Means.
Do the all in one motion, rescind the referral and send it to the floor. We do pass as one motion.
Okay. Anyway, all right. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Let me amend that motion. I move that we rescind the referral to Ways and Means and send this bill 3606 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Riley. He moves to rescind the referral of House Bill 3606 as amended to Ways and Means and moves the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Questions on the motion? I'm not seeing any. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Excused.
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Upland.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Lynn.
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the majority committee vote, the motion passes. Thank you very much. And I am going to assign Representative Roblin as a carrier of this bill. His district also received storm damage during December. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3606 and open a work session on House Bill 3607. Committee members, we have Dash 1 amendments for this bill. And I'm wondering if General Caldwell and Ken Murphy would be willing, and perhaps Paul Evans, to come forward on the Dash 1 amendments.
There we go.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, again, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director of the Military Department. I'm pleased to be here before you today with this recommended set of amendments. The your able staff worked with us and a host of other folks to come up with these amendments. I think, as we suggested in the previous hearing, the objective would be to try to tighten up a little bit of the bill to make sure that there was a process that was defined so we can certainly have all of the stakeholders, potential stakeholders, at the table and involved in any grants and or loans that may be generated from this piece of legislation. I think, again, this is a very needed piece of legislation. I think that this gives us framework to work through to get to the bottom line, which is to try to help organizations, subdivisions of the state, and in order to have them be able to take full advantage of whatever the federal government may offer with respect to relief after a disaster. I think this does that, and I think it's a great piece of legislation and long, long overdue for the state of Oregon.
Thank you very much, General Caldwell. Anything further from our panel? Okay, thank you. Committee members, any questions? Yes, Representative Huffman.
I apologize. Maybe I nodded off in one of the sessions. For some reason, I was thinking we were talking only low-interest loans. But as General Caldwell pointed out, and I see here, there is the potential for grants.
Yes.
Why would we do a grant versus just a low-interest loan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, the idea of grants would never be the preferred option, first of all, not the first priority. But what we try to do is put into the law flexibility enough that if a small community, especially the rural communities that don't have a lot of capital to come together, if it makes more sense to get that community back up on its feet in some kind of grant loan mix or grant from the state community match mix, we tried to build flexibility in there so that in those rare cases, again, in context, a declared emergency, an area that is of significant damage, and then under rare cases in that case, the zero interest loan is the preferred option. The 10-15 split is an option. The grant was to provide a little bit of wiggle room so that if it just makes sense to do something or to have some kind of blended approach for that community that it's there to do. Not clearly would not be the first option, but there are cases where, especially in communities that have, you know, like to use the Vernonia example, they're looking at a $40 million bill potentially to get the schools out of the flood area. And a little bit of a grant tied to a zero interest loan may make the most sense in that particular case. It's not envisioned for large grants. It's not envisioned for grants to ever be the first choice. And again, in terms of the bill itself, there are other areas that the direct aid that's not related to capital reconstruction, but to be able to flush in the direct aid the first week so that Department of Human Services can provide those services that right now they can't by law until we get a presidential deck with individual assistance tied to it. That also is kind of under that rubric.
Mr. Chairman, and I'll just add to what Representative Huffman, what Mr. Evans said. I think that based on the real life situation that we have here in the state of Oregon with respect to how we're going to fund this grant or this loan program, clearly the legislature is going to have extreme oversight however they choose, whatever the legislative body chooses. I think the proposal here was for $2 million. As Mr. Evans indicated, you're looking at $25-30 million alone in Vernonia, the railroad in Tillamook. I mean, so really, when it comes right down to it, any proposals and what you may eventually see without some sort of dedicated revenue flowing into this, which I don't think is going to be a short-term possibility, maybe somewhere down the road, but certainly not in the short term. What you're going to find probably is this group getting together, deciding, you know, where these needs are, how bad they are, and then presenting themselves before an emergency board or the legislature for a funding package. Because literally $2 million will not get you very far down the road to meet that 25%. So I think ultimately the legislature is going to be sitting in chairs behind a dais making decisions whether or not this group actually did the right thing by offering the grant and or the loan or the mix, as Mr. Evans indicated. So I think there's a good deal of oversight and a good deal of control that by virtue of the fact that there is no dedicated money flowing into this on a regular basis, it's going to be an appropriation issue that's going to come before every one of the legislative bodies that deals with that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
So who is it exactly that administers the funds? Is it a joint DHS and Housing and Community Services Department, or who would, Paul, be making the decision, whether it's a small grant with a zero-interest loan or whatever?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, what we have right now is kind of a... Under executive order, the Governor's Recovery Cabinet is doing certain things to help areas that are most disadvantaged by the storm, the economic recovery zones. That isn't in statute yet. We're still trying to find language. We hope to be able to come in 2009 with a fleshed-out approach with legislative input so that that those structures are in place to give you a little more clarity in statute. What this bill would do with the current structure that exists under executive order until we get that other piece fixed is that in the areas that have been designated as economic recovery zones that have subsequent economic recovery councils that are populated by the local folks, they, as a group, will put forward a proposal through this review board that will look at it. And basically, together, they'll try to sort out who's the best agency, what's the best plan, what's the best source of funds. So that, really, again, with the $2 million amount that we're talking about right now, the direct aid wouldn't be a player. That would be in the future. That direct aid would really only come in play until during the initial stages of an emergency where by law we can't release certain things because of federal strings. We're trying to fix that, but until we can fix that, that's where the direct aid piece in this bill is for. So that's kind of the first stages. The capital reconstruction or the zero interest loan or the 10-15 split piece clearly would be done in concert with the Economic Recovery Council of the area, the Governor's Recovery Cabinet, and this board that basically would review it and put forward the best way to make that managed. So for the direct aid, that money would be managed by DHS like they normally do things. But the loan specifically would probably, I assume, the Economic Recovery Zone and the council would designate which agency would be the lead, probably a county, I would assume, but to kind of make those funds happen. It would be a together package. I don't know if I'm answering your question very well, but we're trying to provide a bill that has enough flexibility to do the things that make sense at two different stages of recovery. That initial stage where people need food, they need water, they need sustainment, and then that next piece where you're rebuilding capital projects. And that is where the zero interest loan and the 10-15 split really is focused on. And that is where the review board and the local local leadership will be very essential.
Additional questions? I am not seeing any. Vice Chair Lim. Excuse me, Vice Chair Riley, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3607.
Vice Chair Riley moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3607. Discussion on the motion? I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection to the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 07? I'm not seeing any. They stand adopted. Thank you, committee members. Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3607 as amended to the floor of the do-pass recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you very much. And a correct motion at that, sir. Vice Chair Riley moves House Bill 3607 as amended with a Dash 1 amendments to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Discussion on that motion? I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection? Okay. Yes, I'm going to have the roll called on this, please. Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart.
Excused.
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Lim.
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley.
Aye.
Chair Whitt.
Aye. Having received the majority vote of the committee, the motion is passed. Thank you very much, committee members. That's a referral, so I am going to close the work session on House Bill 3607. Thank you. Anything further to come before our committee?
What's the tomorrow's agenda?
Thank you. I was just going to ask that of Patrick.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Chair, members, we have an informational briefing by Claire Berger from the governor's workforce advisor tomorrow. Has Audrey Feese, who's represents Key Links, they're going to give us a briefing that they've just prepared on workforce development. I'll get pre-meeting materials out to you this afternoon.
I'd appreciate it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Great. Anything further? Yes?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to thank the Chair for bringing these three bills before us. I think they're great bills to deal with emergencies in the future, but also want to remind the committee that there were many other issues that came before us, including Owen and a few others that still need addressed in the future, and we should keep our eye on that ball.
Yes, thank you, Representative Holvey. And to your point, we have a list that's being developed that came out of the 10-hour hearings that we went through in mid-January, and many of those are items that would likely be sent to Representative Boone's Emergency Management Committee, and I'll be bringing that list to you for your review and approval of those items, so that we can send them on to Representative Boone. So, Patrick, maybe we can do that tomorrow, perhaps.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Staff has that list and was supposed to have copies of that list to you this morning, but lost track of that. So, I will get those to you.
So we'll be getting that list out to you. And Representative Huffman?
Something I've been working on since the testimonies, and hopefully I'll be able to know more after this Friday. I plan to meet with Dave Hauser from Eugene, and he's the director of the Chamber of Commerce for the state. And I'm hoping Friday afternoon to be able to present an idea concept to statewide chamber directors that hopefully they'll buy into, and that would be each chamber of commerce throughout the state coordinating a truck of materials, predominantly sheetrock, I would think, but the CAP director, I believe, testified any types of building materials would be very much needed. So if we could coordinate a truck from most of the chambers to head toward Columbia, Clatsop, and Tillamook counties, I think that'd have a powerful impact. I think the schools in Vernonia probably used the majority of the 30,000 square feet of sheetrock that had been donated initially. And even though this has taken a while to coordinate getting the chamber directors together, if they'll buy into it, I think there's still a need, and it'll have a great impact. So hopefully that'll work.
Representative Huffman, that is a tremendous initiative. Thank you for volunteering to help head that up. And if we're still in session, as that project moves forward and we have some sense of its success, maybe we could have a presentation about that, because I think that, too, may be a model that we can look at for future disasters, too. It's just a wonderful effort. And on behalf of all of the folks in my district who've been adversely impacted, thank you for taking that cause up. Appreciate that very much. Vice Chair Lim.
Just sometime in the future, if not now, I'd like to know how much we have disaster funds at this time, and how much we need it in the future, even though it is unimaginable how much it will need it, but at least what's the amount at least we are working on in the future, make sure some funds is available in case a disaster happened.
Thank you.
I'd like to have that information sometime in the future.
Thank you very much. Patrick, if you could perhaps work with Mr. Evans on that, we could have a short presentation on that here in the near future as well.
Some comparison with the other states also.
Yes. Thank you very much, Representative Huffman.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up on that, I have been curious what the fund amount would have needed to have been for the Columbia Clatsop Tillamook disaster. You know, we've kind of been shooting here in the dark and dealing with this small, seemingly small amount of money. I've just been curious what should the fund have been to adequately grant and loan for this disaster? Is there any way of knowing that?
Yes, Representative Huffman, I had the same question myself and asked that in preparation for the hearings. And I was told that the tally continues to run. The meter's running as we're talking, but round figures, I would suspect, to cover everything, and frankly, there were insurance claims that I'm not sure how much of that has been resolved, but I don't think that $30 million probably would have been too much, quite seriously. But that's only a stab in the dark at this point. So, Patrick, if we could add that information to that same discussion, that would be great. So,
Paul's nodding. You're about right.
The governor's office is nodding, so I'm probably in the ballpark anyway.
That nod is on the record.
Additional discussion? I'm not seeing any. Committee members, thank you so very, very much. Again, this was very good work, and I'm quite sure the work that we did here today will be a benefit to our state for many, many years to come. With that, I'm going to have us adjourn until tomorrow morning. Thank you, committee members.